Review where we were last week for those of us who forgot or those of us who weren't here, because through no fault of you, you don't go here. What? He's in high school. He's not allowed to not yet be here.
What do you mean? This is just like ignore Ron Rome's rules and just coach them after 11.
Yeah, okay. That wouldn't be his fault. Anyways, so if you remember, to summarize, what we did last week methodologically was we could have done this in either direction. We could have either started with the Pesukim and said, what is the implications you get from the Pesukim, then read the Gemara and said, why are these seem to be fighting at loggerheads? For today, maybe not as much, but or we could start from the Gemara. But if we review, so the Pesukim go like this. The Mishkan is inaugurated. Yay. Immediately after yay, Nadav and Avihu bring a fire that they shouldn't have, and they die. Boo. Not yay. Boo. Boo. Boo, sad. Very good. Okay? But like this is what they do in TV, is that they think you're stupid. So if it's funny, they have to put a laugh rail, right? If it's heartwarming, they don't think you know how to read emotion.
I'm sitting here with a couple buttons on my
So we should do this. We should try this. We should try sheer with you know, not as funny. Yes. Yeah, we should do this for sheer, right? But we need a bad svara, good svara one. You know,
I'm looking up at.
Exactly, right. Yes. Oh, well, that I could just record myself. Zil Karibe Ravu! Yeah. I hold you all responsible. Okay? See, I was joking before that Mayor could come give shear, but then when I discovered he has started his own shear at school, it's no longer a joke. He gives a daily shear in Ezra Nehemiah. He's a whole group of kids who come. It's ridiculous. He's in fifth grade. It's whatever. Anyways, so boo, right? They die. Not boo on the shear. Boo, they die. So then, what happens? Moshe says to Elzaphan and Uziel, why does it smell like it's burning? No. Go and what? Take their bodies out. But then he says to the Kohanim, you can't mourn. Okay? Then you have the psukim that say, Yayin v'sheichar al teisht, don't get drunk, which again, at least one day in Chazal derives from here that was the sin of Nadav and Avihu. Then he tells Elazar and Itamar, I want you to bring the carbonate as you should. Kichein suveti, that's what you were commanded to do. Yes? Yeah. Right? Not the dead, the remainder ones, not the other ones died, yes. And they do. The carbonate of the miluim they bring, and they exactly as he says. Then you get the chatat, and the psukim say that Moshe was darosh darash Moshe. He looked into it, and it was burnt by itself. Elazar and Itamar bnei Aaron and Itarim leimor, and he yells at them, and he says, "Madua lo achalvan chatat b'mkom hakodesh ki kodesh kadoshemi ve'otor natan lochem asid avon ha'idol chaper lem le'nei." What is this? I told you to burn. I told you to eat it. You burnt it. Hey, lo huva atam ala kodesh pinima. The blood wasn't brought inside. It's not possible. Achol dachlo ota b'kodesh kashet sineiti. Eat it. Like I said. Vayidaber Aaron el Moshe. Hey, nayom ekriv el chatatam el adam. Lefnei Adonai v'atikren oti ko'ela v'achalti chatat ayom. Vayidav v'nei Adonai. And Aaron says, what do you mean? All this terrible stuff happened to me. You think God would be happy if I ate the carbon? Vayishma Moshe vayidav v'nei Adonai. And Moshe says, taka. It's good. Okay. In the Pesukim, this is a yelling match. Right? It's a yelling match. Yeah? Then we saw last week that what happened in the Gemara, this Gemara appears in the middle of a complicated sugya of Aninut Oraita, Aninut Bayom versus Aninut Balayla, Aninut Yom Rishon. And then the Gemara says that, so they're in the middle of this whole discussion, and what happens? The Gemara tells us the discussion is that Moshe comes to him and he says, why didn't you bring it? But instead of reading it, Hein lo huva adama el hakodesh pinim, it wasn't brought in. Right? What does he say? Amar le Moshe, v'chi hei mekriv ani akrav shavle, hein lo huva adama v'hakodesh. He says, v'doma banyin et akrav uta. He says, well, maybe your sons brought it and they're not allowed to because they're owning him. No, I brought it. I'm a Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol doesn't have a psul aninut. Oh, he says, aha, so maybe the blood was brought inside and it's pasul. So no. Lo v'atama uvekodesh haita. So then he says, achotoch lo, kasher tzivei, banina yochloa. So then you should eat it. Amar lo, and he said, v'atikren otikla'ila v'chalti chatar hayom, ha'itav b'nei Hashem. Shema lo shamata ala bekat she'sha'a. Says, I don't like your lamdos. Maybe I was only supposed to eat the special karban miluah, but this is a karban which happens to be brought today. It's the Sirah Chodesh. And then he brings a kal vachomer. How do I know? Because Maiser, Shani, you don't eat baninut. So obviously the karban you should eat baninut. And Moshe says, you're right. Taka, you're right. V'lo bosh lomar lo shamati, amar shamati v'shachachti. And the Gemara gives another version. And we said, okay, what happened between the Psukim and the Gemara? The Psukim, it's a screaming match. The Gemara, Moshe comes, and he has a whole shear with him. And he says, maybe they brought it in their own name, so the apostles said, no, I brought it on the Kohen God. Okay, so maybe the blood went inside. No, don't worry, the blood didn't go inside. So then why didn't you eat it? I told you you were supposed to eat it. Yeah, but that was Bekotche Doro. That was Bekotche Shah. This is Kotche Doro. I have a Kabbal Chomer. Moshe's like, that's a good lamdus. I understand the Havamina, but the Maskot is different. And we're like, okay, how'd you get from one to the other? So we noted two things. First, what were the two main diukim that we noted in the Psukim? One is, very good, is that the first part of it, the Pasuk always says tsuveti, that Moshe was commanded. At the last one, when he says eat it, he says siveti, that I commanded. Now what's the difference between tsuveti and siveti? Tsuveti means God said it to Moshe. Siveti means I said it, which means I might have made a mistake. That's the first deal it seems to drive them. The second one, as we noted, was the magic words that Chazal love, which is Darosh Darash Yosef. Darosh Darash, that's it. Right, exactly. Tarof Tarof Yosef. You see, Darosh Darash is Moshe. I darshened it, which can mean I researched it, or it can mean I made a drasha. Okay, that's where we left off last week. What we need to figure out is what it is the Gemara trying to get at. I mean, fine. Maybe I figured out why the Gemara says it. But there's a big problem. So let's go through the problems and try to answer them. So, yeah.
Why do they feel like they should do something other than exactly what he said?
Oh, very good. Okay. So Michael asked the major question here, which is the following. According to one day in Chazal, the sin of Nadav and Avihu, this is one of the day in the Gemara Erevin and the Midrash, what was their sin? That they paskin shlo bifnei Moshe Rabbah. They paskin against Moshe, which means that they died because they didn't listen. And now the Gemara goes out of its way to say that they didn't listen because they had halachik machlogin against Moshe, and they paskined without Moshe Rabbeinu, and instead of, you know, dying, which is what happened in Avin Avihu, instead, the Gemara goes out of its way to say, oh, you see from here, Moshe is the paradigmatic Anav. He is humble because he wasn't embarrassed to say, you're right, I was wrong. I thought that's what I heard from God, but I misunderstood. What? What? But he paskined. He's not being punished and baked in, it's by God. But no, he can't. He burns it. He burns it. It's gone. It's done. Right?
Right?
So, very good. So, what? Which one? That's the sin?
Yeah.
Oh, no, not. Did I say Erechim? I thought I said Erevin.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Erevin Samach Gimel. If it's in Erechim, also let me know, but it's not. As far as I know, it's not. It's in Erechim. No, fine. I mean, that makes sense. That's not a crazy mistake to make. Good. So what do we do? Good. So, Michael, what do we do? Right? Because you're highlighting, it's not just that Chazal seemed to counter-read the story. It's that Chazal read the story in a very particular way would actually put it in direct tension with the message that Chazal derived from the first half of the story. Ah, so Evan says, very good, to quote the very famous line, which is, one man's reductio ad absurdum is the other man's inachanami. Right? 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 That is, what?
Oh my God.
Very famous, what? It's a very famous line. I went to refer right after, right? Meaning, one man's reductio ad absurdum is another man's inachanami. Right? Reductio ad absurdum is when you, right, you basically bring something to a point where you're just like, I don't need to prove that this is absurd. It's just absurd. And therefore, I can prove that what you're saying is wrong simply because it's logically impossible. Right? It just makes no sense. And inachanami is, yeah, exactly. Right? So, so Michael says, wait a second. They just died because they passed into Moshe Rabbeinu. The lesson you should learn from this is never go away from Moshe Rabbeinu, and you shouldn't be independent. You should go to your Rebbe and... Never should you come up with your own svaras and paskin again. Oh, it's the worst thing in the world. And then the next line says, Elomai, Aaron did exactly that. And not only did Moshe just not say, you shouldn't have done that. Moshe said, you know what? I was wrong. I thought God told me to do this. Turns out I misunderstood God. And God was only, like you said, that your lumptus is right. That God told me about Kodshe. Shah, and this is called Shedorot, and it's based on a different thing. Well, exactly. Done.
Wait, why? As long as you do a problem, right?
So, but at some level, right? Meaning, at some level, what many people, now we can, again, I was debating, do I give you Makarot? But a lot of modern people have pointed out that that is. Bidiyuk, the point that the Gemara is trying to balance it. That's exactly the point, that the Gemara is trying to balance it, right? Meaning, if you, by turning this story, right, by taking Nadav and Avihu's story and making it about Psak, and turning Aaron and Moshe's story about Psak, the Gemara forces a paradox, or forces a tension. Or a dialectic is really what it is. It's not a paradox. It's a dialectic. It didn't need to be that way, right? There are seven other sins that Nadav and Avihu could have done, right? He could have been drunk, right? But one tradition in Chazal, and it seems to me that the best way to understand the second part of the Gemara is in light of the first part of the Gemara, is that it's creating a dialectic. And it's not just that, right? Once you see the dialectic, is there another dialectic in the story? In the psukim, where would Chazal get the notion? Because, okay, I've just noted that Chazal created a dialectic. But before I say what's the point of the dialectic, is there another dialectic in the psukim that would highlight why Chazal might think that the message of this story is, right? Now, a dialectic in the very classic Hegelian sense, which is you present a thesis, you present an antithesis, the goal being synthesis, right? That you show the two sides that are both in a certain sense true to come with a more complex truth. Right? What is it? Now, let's take it. Okay, let's focus. Who is the speaker here? It can't be Nadav and Avihu because they're dead, right? Okay. Don't normally speak. Sometimes they do. Not here. What? No. In Ketubot, Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, right after he dies, he still comes back Friday night to make Kiddush. Why? I don't know. It's one of the weirder Gemaras. I don't know what came up for me. It's Ktubas Kuf Gimel Kuf Dalet. It's the death of Rebbe.
Of what?
Well, Ktubas. Yeah, no, it's one of these very weird Gemaras because I think the first time I learned this Gemara in depth was with the Reich Klapper, where some of the Rishonim try to use that Gemara because in that story, Rebbe is in excruciating pain from terrible constipation or something, or something. Whatever, and so he's screaming, and you can hear him 100 miles away. So the Talmidei Chachamim are davening for him to stay alive, and his maidservant davens for him to die. And eventually, and they're fighting. So finally, she says, "I'm going to one up them," and she takes a pot and she like throws it down, so it shatters and distracts them. And then Rebbe finally dies. And from here, the Ron learns that you're allowed to daven for people to die if they're in excruciating pain. Right, and then this becomes a big halachic discussion. But Ray Klapper Kedarko, who's a very careful reader, he's like, well, if you read the Gemara carefully, all you can prove, according to the Ran, is that you're allowed to daven for people to die who you know who will come back to life to say Kiddush every Friday night. So, like, it's a very limited halachic application, right? This is the danger of deriving halacha from Agarata, because, like, it's not exactly supposed to be a normal story. That everything that story is weird.
That sounds great. Now I'm gonna go.
Oh, so, but who's the other person? Where you, it's clear there's a dialectic here. What's the other dialectic that points to Chazal methodologically seeing attention here? Yeah, but which is? But there's something else, which is Aaron. What is Aaron's? There's another dialect. What is Aaron's response at the beginning of the story? What is, no, beginning of the story. After they die. But silence. Vayidoma Aaron. He's silent. He's silent. What does silence imply there? That he agrees even to what? Yeah, his sons just died, which is a terrible, on the day of the Miluim. And the day they're going to the Mishkan, you would think that he would, like, have something to say. But he accepts God's decree with complete equanimity, with complete self-negation. What? I don't know if it's denial, but the point is he doesn't say anything, right? By the end of the story, who's not talking? Moshe. Aaron talks, and Moshe's response is, does it say what Moshe says? No. He hears. He listens. Vaytav Beinav. Right? So there's also a dialectic where at some level, Aaron is silent at the beginning of the story, but this time he speaks. With that, what would you now think? Right. If you didn't have the second half of the story, and especially if you didn't have the second half of the story as Chazal read it, what would you think that the lesson of the story is supposed to be? Always accept what God said. It doesn't matter what. It doesn't matter. On halachic level, whatever is paskin, you don't argue. Whatever happens in your life, just take it. Right? That's the lesson you would have gotten. Right? According to Chazal, Navdav and Aviyu died because they paskin of their own accord. Aaron loses his children on this day, his response is nothing. You would come across with the feeling that the proper response religiously, in halacha, in hashkafa, in life, is complete passivity, complete acceptance. What do Chazal do by teasing out Aaron's argument with Moshe? Very good. It's not an absolute. Exactly. It's not an absolute. Meaning that what? What does that show? And what does that do to the beginning of the story? Exactly. Meaning, now it puts a new perspective on Aaron's silence. You thought Aaron was silent because the proper religious response is just to accept what everyone says? No, you don't understand. He did it because, even if he was sad, he understood. Okay, they deserved it. Meaning, it hurt. But when things didn't make sense, and he said, how could you make me rejoice and have the karban? Then He resisted, and God says, you're right. Which means that what Chazal are actively doing is balancing the story, saying, listen, is it dangerous to take initiative? Yes. But is it problematic to not take initiative and just listen to what everyone else says? Also, meaning Chazal, what they're doing is they're... Yes, exactly, but not as extreme. Right, so I, many years ago, I found, because I was in Toronto especially, it was important to quote this, but Alex Magid, who then was like right out of high school, but now he's not, had a blog on Tanakh things where he noted that this is what Chazal are doing, this is what the Psukim are doing, right? And he very succinctly puts it like this, right, that such are the challenges of leadership. When everyone takes their own initiative, we have pandemonium. When nobody takes initiative, we have paralysis. Either way, intimate the stories of Aaron, Nadab, and Aviyu, we're playing with fire. But we succeed, and our initiative was justified, then we've entered into the Holy of Holies, right? Meaning, yes, I said it was a good pun. I said it was well phrased. That's why I told you. That's why I read it. It was well phrased. So I think that's one level. But there's another way of saying it, right? Which is, right? 1 second. There's another way of looking at it, which is the following. When Chazal say, Nadav and Aviyu sin, what was it? So there's two ways of looking at this, right? There's more than many ways of looking at this. What was the sin of Nadav and Aviyu? So one way is looking at it, one way of looking at it is that it was initiative per se that was problematic. Right? Initiative per se. What's the other way of looking at it? And again, if you divide what Chazal said, saying that it was, they poskined against the Rebbe is saying, at some level, though not 100%, it was the initiative per se. The other possibility is no, it was the content of the initiative. How are Chazal going to tell you midrashically that the problem wasn't initiative per se, but was the content of the initiative? Exactly. Is by highlighting the fact that Aaron could come in and say, no, but I don't just accept what you said. I think that God wouldn't want me to, right, to celebrate today. Okay, I have to bring the carbono. We don't want me to celebrate and eat carbono. And so this is similar, but it's a slightly different point, is that Chazal are midrashically telling you that it wasn't another one of you taking initiative per se that was problematic. It was the content. And how do they illustrate that? By A, Aaron taking initiative, but how does he take initiative? Think about how he takes initiative. What does he do? Where does he get... What? But how? From where? The Torah. Right? Meaning not out of nowhere. I mean, in this Gemara, he does. He makes a Kal V'Chomer from Ma'aser Sheni. Which means that what's he saying? It's not from nowhere. Right? He's... So Rav Bazak highlights this, right? He says, however, the Torah does not seek to set down mindless decrees. Along with the lessons of accepting God's command, even when we don't understand it, the Torah presents a parallel system of forbidden foods that makes sense to a person's intellect. The Torah is based on truth and justice, on understanding of man's nature and his ability to internalize his messages. The message of accepting the yoke of heaven and fulfilling God's command, even when we don't understand them, is important, but not the sole message. And indeed, most of the sections on forbidden foods, right, but that's what comes later, do make sense. Moreover, it seems that the concept is expressed even before it reached the forbidden foods, in the story of Nadav and Abihu itself, because following their tragic deaths, Moshe discovers that the sin offering with his kohanim we're supposed to eat has been burned, and then you get this story. Right? So one is that it's balancing is initiative per se. The other is to force you to ask, what was their sin? Was their sin doing whatever they wanted, or because they got it wrong? And they weren't thoughtful, and they weren't, right? They didn't use the, right? Yeah, or they, or now there, right? Now there is a, right? There's another possibility, right? What, yeah, sure.
Is this something that God said to do? Like, what, how are we interpreting? Like, Moshe didn't just, like, make it up.
No, so, well.
Did Moshe misunderstand God?
Yes, that's what Chazal assumed, that he misunderstood God. Right? That's also another major methodological move that Chazal are making here. There's another possibility here. The Chamalevich argues that Chazal are telling you by doing this, they're specifically not focusing on Avodah Hashem in general. What is the other thing they might be teaching in this story? What is the subject matter of both Nadav and Avihu's death and Aaron's
Karbanot?
And this is Graeber's favorite thing to talk about. So Nechama Leibovich says, you know what Chazal are doing here? Chazal are telling you something profound about Karbanot. And that is what? What is the danger of Karbanot? That they're, you relate to it as a Avodah Zarah or as magic? Right? What?
I was trying to figure out
right?
What you're going
to do. Right? Magic. Right? Now, what? So Nechama Leibovich is very simple. You know what Chazal are doing here? And what are Chazal doing here? They're saying, listen, Nadav and Avihu treated Karbanot as magic, right? We want to be close to God. We're going to be carbon we're not commanded to bring. That will bring us close to God. Karbon is magic, right? I bring an extra carbon, extra fire, I'll be close to God. If you start treating Karbanot like that, you treat it like magic, you're treating it like Avodah Zarah. However, think about what the Gemara specifically thinks Aaron is doing.
For what?
Very good. Exactly. It's not that he's making a random drasha. What is he saying? He's telling Moshe, listen, I want to understand the nature of karbana. And he says, listen, the karbana sha'a, the karbana for the miluim, I understand. The miluim has to go on. But the karban dorot, there's a rule that I learned from Meiser Sheni. And that is the karban is an expression of simcha. And that's why even Meiser Sheni, I can't bring if I'm an onaid. Now, it's true that this karban happens to be brought today, but fundamentally it's a regular karban. It just happens to be brought today. And you want me to eat it as if I wasn't upset? But that's a problem. Eating the karban is an expression of simcha. That's why an onaid can't do it. Meaning, when you eat the karban, you rejoice with God. But if I were to eat it right now, when I'm not happy, right, his children just died, he was an onain. If I was going to eat it right now, and I was going to pretend, oh, just eat it as if nothing happened, what am I essentially doing? What am I doing to the karbanot? How am I relating to them? Like magic, right? Meaning, I understand the internal logic of karbanot. My sons didn't. My sons thought karbanot was magic. So they just brought it. But you're asking me to treat karbanot as magic in the opposite direction, which is to not think about the inner logic, to not think about the state of being that you're supposed to be in within karbanot. But I'm telling you that no. I understand what karbanot are about, and let me tell you that what I've learned from Meiser Sheni is that the eating component of a karban is about the simcha mitzvah. It's about whatever exactly that means, right? And rejoicing with God and creating a kesher with the mindset of simcha, which is, right, the Rambam talks about at length, is part of, right, nevuah, and, right, simcha is a particular religious state of being. And you're asking me to pretend that I'm in a happy state and just eat the karban as if nothing ever happened? No, you don't understand. I'm not eating the karban. Because I do understand the karbanot aren't magical. My sons didn't. Right, so she writes, Lo nitzava Aaron, vav lo nidrash menashit malei simcha. Says, it wasn't demanded of Aaron, and it wasn't asked that he should be magically become happy, as if he was, right? He said, Ki eina karba pu'ula magit, hamu'ila vale umekrali de etzem asiyata gam lale vimo. Karbanot aren't magical. It is a symbol of the way you're thinking of your kavana. Right. So far we have three explanations of what are Chazal responding to. One is you don't want to think that initiative is always terrible. You want to notice that sometimes it's terrible, sometimes you need to take it. So Chazal create a balanced picture. The second is, right, you don't want people to walk away with the idea from another Navio that you can never understand mitzvah and that's why you can't do anything yourself. No, it's you can understand it, you just need to actually try to understand it. You can't just do it because you want to. The third, the Hamalev, is no, it's specifically about karbono. Aaron isn't necessarily about Avodah Hashem in general. It's that Nadav and Avihu thought karbono were magical, so they just brought whatever they wanted. And Aaron is saying to Moshe, listen, I am not going to bring it because I've learned from the system of karbono that you can't fake it, right? That you have to feel it. It has to be an actual expression of who you are and the relationship you currently have with God. That's why an onay normally can't eat karbono. So I understand there's a gzeirat hakatu for the karbono of the day. I get that. But the regular karbono happened to be wrong today. I understand the internal logic. Don't make me treat the karbono like magic. Right? If I brought the karbono, that's what I would be doing.
A lot of things this year.
Now, Shadal limit, right, zeroes in even further. It's not just karban. He said, what karban is it? And again, this is how you have to go each level of logic here, right? Chatat. It's very good. It's a chatat. So Shadal said, we're going to get there. Shadal says, right, we have to go, right, so we've gone from, this is a lesson about Avodah Hashem, right, an initiative, to it's a lesson about karbanot, right? Shadal says, no, let's go down one more. It's a lesson about chatat. And he says the logic is very simple. What's the lesson? What's the lesson?
Don't bring a chatat if you don't understand.
No, punk fakir. Don't bring a chatat. Chatat has to be an expression of forgiveness. And what is Aaron saying? Clearly God doesn't forgive me because he just killed two of my sons. You want me to bring the chatat? Wait, what do you want me to pretend that I have forgiveness? I know I don't have forgiveness. How do I know I don't have forgiveness? You just killed two of my sons. But I had kapara. Daminli. So it could be. Now, I'm not saying he's definitely right, but he says... What? Sorry, so he says that Morik Theida, right? He assumes that the fact that another Nehu died on the day of the Nehu must reflect a sin on the behalf of the nation, right? That the nation partially wasn't. Now, again, this is a jump that he makes.
And, so because the nation is not the
and therefore, I can't, right? I clearly am part of this nation, and therefore, I can't bring a chata, because I can't bring a chata if there's no kapara.
Which also goes to
say it again? Yeah, but remember what we saw about it. But, oh, please. Remember what we did?
That
the nation. Well, or that there was some sin, yeah. Okay. But now, as Evan notes, we have to go even one step farther, which is okay. It could be that Chazal are balancing a lesson about Odah Hashem. It could be they're right about initiative, about whether you understand the Torah. It could be they're making a point about Karbanot, to Chacham Leibovich. According to Shadal, no, they're making a point about the Chatot. But now Evan says, but wait a second, we have to be precise here, right? Which is that it's not just any Chatot. According to Chazal, which Chatot is it? It's Chatot Rosh Chodesh. According to Chazal, it's Chatot Rosh Chodesh. That's exactly the point. That's why he says it's a Chatot Dorot. Right, this is a Karban Dorot and not a Karban Shah. It's the Chatat Rosh Chodesh. But now you have to notice there's one thing. Chazal play with something. They read Darosh Darash as Moshe made a drasha. But what does Darosh Darash Moshe really mean in context? No, that's what Chazal take it as interpreted. What is Darosh Darash Moshe? The Etzira Chatat Darosh Darash Moshe V'inei Sarav V'ikzof. What does that mean? He investigated, meaning Moshe already had an inkling that something is wrong about this. Right? That's what the Rosh Darash means. Yes, Avi?
It's the first time I talked to her all day.
Would you like, you know, the next word here is by itself, right? Is to explode into a rage. Is that it? Not that I would do that, Rahman al-Islam. Never. Never. He's never sinned before. We already established he's never sinned. Send regards. Send regards. I understand. I'm glad that you want to talk to her. Just tell her that, give her a nice fart from Sukkah or something. Okay?
But this.
Okay, good. So the simple shot of Darosh Darash is what? Is that Moshe specifically... Right? Is specifically... What? Yeah. Why? So here... Now again, we can see whether this works in the Gemara, but let's first thing in the Pesukim and then see what it says about the Gemara. Is that... Well, okay. Why would Moshe be particularly worried that they didn't bring the Chata Rosh Chodesh? So, Rav Bick suggests the following. He says, wait a second. Think about Moshe's argument. Think about Aaron's argument. Aaron's argument is this carbon shouldn't be eaten because it's... Because it's a carbon doro. Meaning, carbon doro. That the special halacha that we have to keep bringing the carboners, nothing ever happened, is unique to what? To the carbonot that are unique to the miluim. Right? That's Aaron's argument according to the Gemara. Is that the first two carbonot, the reason Aaron kept bringing them is because they are what? They're unique to the miluim. There's a special gzerah katuv, special tzivui from Hashem, that even though they're an avelut, or aninut really, they continue bringing the carbonot of the day. Aaron highlights this fact. And he says to Moshe, but this isn't. This is a carbon doro. Now, one way of reading this dialogue, guys, one way of reading this dialogue is that Moshe thought that the exception applied to all carbonot, and Aaron teaches him through his lamdos that it was only the carbonate Sha'a, not the Karban Dora. That's one possibility. But there's a different potential read, and that is? That what? That Moshe was specifically insistent that the Karban Dorot be brought. It was specifically the Karban Dorot. Because if you read the Pasuk, again, in Pshat, not the way Chazal read Darash Darash as a drasha, but Darash Darash, that he demanded, that he looked into it, investigated, and made sure this Karban was brought. Why do you think that Moshe, of all Karbana, would be more desiring that the normal, run-of-the-mill, day-to-day Karban be brought than the Karbana of the of the Miluim?
Well, first time, you can't interrupt.
Because
you're inaugurating by doing.
Right, exactly. Meaning, look, to do the inaugural Karbanot is one thing, but if you want to prove that the Mishkan worked, that the inauguration worked, that God came down, and God isn't angry after Nadav and Avihu, so finishing the inauguration is not the big chiddush. The big chiddush is that you start...
normalcy.
Yeah, you start normalcy. You start the Mishkan functioning. Which means that it could be that specifically the fact that this was a Karban Dorot, that it was just a run-of-the-mill Karban, is why Moshe gets so uptight, and you look at him and he says, why aren't you bringing it? Right? Because bringing the Chatat Rosh Chodesh is, right? What? No, it's not the inaugural one. It's the first normal Karban.
Wait, what's the...
They brought the inaugural Karban out. Right? Again, you weren't here last week, but you should know the psukim. Is that they already brought the inaugural ones. It's only when they bring all the inaugural Karban they brought, it also happened to be Rosh Chodesh. When it gets to the Chatat Rosh Chodesh, they don't bring it. That's how Chazal understand it. And Moshe says, why didn't you bring it? And Aaron said, because listen, all the Karbanot that were unique to today, I brought. But the Karban which happens to be brought today, namely Chatat Rosh Chodesh, which is brought because today happens to be Rosh Chodesh, I'm not going to bring because it's a normal Karban. And as a normal Karban, the normal halacha to apply. And what's the normal halacha? An onin doesn't bring a karban. What? So a regular kohen doesn't bring it, a kohen gadol doesn't eat it.
Why are we supposed to bring those other two?
Because God said so. Remember that was tsuveti tsiveti. That those, tsuveti, God commanded him to.
Are they normal?
No, they're once in a ever. They're the karban of Elohim. They're the ones that inaugurated the Mishkan. They were only brought then. And that's it. So, Rabik argues that no, it's specifically the Chatat Rosh Chodesh that Moshe looks and says, okay, I get it, we did the inauguration, but now I want to know, did it work? Did we start normalcy? That is the sign of success more than the fact that we, right, you can have the ribbon cutting ceremony, but if you never actually start the business, you never, right, you have a new restaurant, you cut the ribbon, and then you never open the door.
Right?
That's why people put up, like, you know, the first dollar, right? The first dollar they ever paid, it's like they put on the wall, right? It is a bit weird. But the point is that at some level, it's the first expression of normalcy that's actually the sign of success. But the fact that you cut the ribbon, that's not success. Exactly. Now, one second. So now, in another wonderful turn of phrase, Rubik writes, I have to share some certain wonderful turns of phrase, which is, well, he says, this moment, while Moshe wonders that the entire enterprise is about to go up in smoke, literally, the fire which consumed Nadav and Avihu, is at the crossroads from where the basic story of the Torah will continue in either one direction or the opposite, right? Meaning, he said, Moshe is wondering, are we going to say that the story of Nadav and Avihu proves that this didn't work? So he wants to know, despite it all, is going to... And what does Chazal... And what does... According to Chazal, now what does Aaron... Right, what does Aaron do? What? He thinks halacha good. Now let's think very specifically about halacha. Right, now this is brilliant. Because let's say that's what Moshe is worried about. Let's say Moshe is worried about, will God actually be among the Jewish people? Will the Mishkan actually succeed in being the place where you have a relationship with God? Ah, now listen to the language. Nah, yep. But what does Arun say to him? What details? Listen to the words. Be a careful reader. He says, I've learned from my Sersheni that I shouldn't eat it. And then what are the words he uses in the Psukim to explain that he knows that God doesn't want him to eat?
Hebrew also?
What does he say? Come on. At the end, Aaron turns to Moshe and he says, you know why I'm not eating it? Very good. He says, I'm not going to eat it because Vaydaber Aaron el Moshe hin hayom mekrivur chatatam v'levotam v'nei Adonai v'tkrenoti ka'ile v'achalti chatat hayom ha'itav b'nei Adonai. He said, you know why I'm not eating it? Because what did I learn from my Maaser Sheni? That God doesn't want you to eat the carbon when you're in a state of sadness. Because again, as the Rambam emphasizes by Nevuah, based on Elisha. Remember, the Rambam is... Okay, let's do a little Chazaria. The Rambam thinks there's spiritual value to music. What does he think the main spiritual value is to music? It makes you happy. Happy is the right word. It makes you... What? It's meaning happy is probably the wrong word. Sameach isn't really doesn't translate well as happy, but it could be joy, it could be contentment, it could be right. It could be like peace of mind, right? Simcha is a little bit, you know, it's not happy in like party, right? Meaning it's, and he proves that state of mind is necessary to appreciate and understand God. How does he know? How does he know? No, because Elisha, when he was upset, said, I can't prophesy. That's actually the proper, prophesy is the better. So he says, bring the music. And once he's calm, then he gets a prophecy. So what do you see? That music is important because it brings you to a certain peace of mind. And in order to understand God, you can't be all riled up. You need to be calm. So what does Aaron say? I've learned that karbanot, which are an expression of being in a relationship with God, especially eating the karban, can't be done when one is upset. How do I know? Because in Onen can't eat Maaser Sheni. And you know why I'm not eating the karban now? Because I'm not in the state of mind. But why is that a problem? Because God is present. Hayitav bein Hashem, meaning God, the Mishkan has succeeded. Mazel Tov. This is the place where you forge a relationship with Hashem. And guess what? I'm in the state of mind that God has said is not conducive to perceiving God. How do I know? Because that's the halacha. So if I ate it, what would that prove? Or that God isn't present because I'm eating it and who cares, right? But the fact that I'm keeping the details of the halacha shows that the Mishkan is succeeding in being the place where you forge a relationship with God. And then Moshe says, aha, vayitav ve'inav. You're right. Right? And here he quotes the Rav, right? That in the words of my teacher, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, death of a close one impugns the image of God inherent in man. The possibility of man being the sanctuary of God is based on his being created in the image of God. This does not indicate a problem with the Mishkan, but with the Kohen. In fact, not eating the sacrifice by an Onen might be taken as a sign that the sacrifice does indeed have full sanctity. Hence, not only does Moshe accept his answer, but it was good in his eyes. He is reassured and his mood changes from anger and frustration to pleasure. The goal has, in fact, been accomplished. No, he says, Hayitav bein Hashem. Would a God have been happy? Right? He's implying that he, it's difficult because he's sensitive to the fact that he's in a relationship with God, that he's learned from Maaser Sheni, just like Elisha, you know, couldn't prophesy when he was upset. You can't bring Meiser Shani when you're an Onan because it's not conducive to being in a relationship with God, to understanding God, to prophecy, to whatever exactly you think is going on there. Which means that not doing it is evidence of the fact that the Mishkan is already the proper place to have that relationship with God, and that's why he needs to be sensitive to the laws. So now, we now, I think, have five basic directions of what Chazal are doing. Right? Because clearly what they're doing is they're balancing the story. So one possibility is following the Gemara in Erevin, that according to the Gemara in Erevin, the beginning of the story tells you, don't paskin for yourself. Chazal go out of their way to create a halachic dialogue to tell you, not so fast, right? That extreme obedience without thinking for yourself is also a problem. And the truth is somewhere in the middle, possibility one. Right? That it's on the level of psak, right? Or slight alternative is, it's the question of initiative, right? Meaning, if you just learn from Nabda view, say you can never take initiative because you can never understand God. What you learn from the second half of the story is, no, you can take initiative, it's just that it needs to be the right initiative. You need to think it out. You need to make sure it makes sense. Third possibility is this isn't about Avodah Hashem in general, it's about Karbono. And that's Nechama Leibovich. Nechama Leibovich says, listen, the danger of what Nadav and Avihu did was that they said, we're going to bring the Karbon, magic, we'll be close to God. Aaron argues that if he would just bring the Karbon out and he wouldn't care about his mental state, he wouldn't care about the normal halachot, he wouldn't. That would be magic because I'm not following the rules. The fact that he's following the rules and being sensitive to his state of mind and being sensitive to what the Karbon are going to be accomplished shows that he, unlike his sons, understands the Karbon out. What? Yeah, and I think it's very nice. Right? The fourth possibility is that it's specifically about chatat. Right? That it's about chatat. That's shadal, at least in the psukim, right? Which is, no, it's maybe a chatat can only be brought if we are forgiven, and we're not. The fifth possibility, and that's what I, right, is that it's specifically chatat Rosh Chodesh. Is that Moshe specifically wants chatat Rosh Chodesh to be brought, maybe because he thinks that will prove that God is presence in the Mishkan, or the Mishkan is the place which is conducive to Avodah Hashem. Again, I mean, I'm not going to get into the whole theology of what it means, whatever exactly that means. It's the place that's conducive to Avodah Hashem, to understanding God, to forming a relationship with God that represents God in this world. We can talk about what the Mishkan is theologically, okay, though not in 5 minutes. that would go on forever. But whatever exactly that is, I don't know. So, I'll figure out in a minute. Right? I'll figure out in a minute. Chata Rosh Chodesh, right, is what? Sorry. Chata Rosh Chodesh, according, might be specifically the evidence that, well, look, the inauguration is one thing, but if it doesn't start, you don't get that first dollar, right? You just do the ribbon cutting, but you don't do that first dollar, that shows that it wasn't a success. And Aaron responds, and he says, no, you don't understand. It's not bringing the karbanot that proves that the Mishkan has succeeded. What proves the Mishkan has succeeded? If it is the place where you have to, where by being sensitive to the rules and the religious sentiments of the Mishkan, that you can successfully be in relationship with God. You're telling me just to bring it, to prove, to eat it rather, to just prove that what? That it's working. But let me tell you, I'll show you how it's working. Oh, I know it's working because I'm applying the normal laws of Meiser Sheni, which tell me that you can only be in a healthy relationship with God when you're have a you know a calm state of mind. That's why an Onan isn't allowed to eat a karbon. If I were to eat the karbon right now, what would that do? It would imply that the Mishkan is not a place where God, where you forge a relationship with God, because who cares what emotional state you're in? What cares what religious sentiment you're in? Just eat it. What? I understand, right? But what's the diuk that leads to this? It's the play on words, right? It's the play on words. What's the right? Why? What drives this particular drasha or this interpretation is the play on words in the psukim, which is Aaron says, "I won't eat it because hayitav b'nei Hashem." Would it be good in God's eyes? And what does the pasuk frame Moshe's response? Vayitav b'nav. Right, you're asking, how could the same argument you're using be what gives Moshe comfort? And the answer is, I don't know, but the Pesukim imply it by using the same word that Aaron says, Hayitav Bein Hashem, and Moshe, and the response is, Vayitav Beino. It's the same word, which implies that, yes, there is something about, right, there is a reversibility about this argument, right, that there is, that he's taking, right, that he is offering a perspective shift, and it's specifically that perspective shift that Moshe buys. Right, there is that implication. So again, it is surprising. I looked at the Mefarshim. Not some of the Mefarshim, the Agadata, bother actually trying to understand what the Agadah is doing. And that's why I had to rely more on people who were, you know, trying to understand the Psukim. I know it's overtime, but let me just to establish, right, that it is Sir Rosh Chodesh. Right, again, we actually didn't get that far in the Gemara, but if I actually continue the Gemara just very quickly, right, the Gemara continues with its halachic discussion, which I won't get into, right, but the Gemara had said, Ibailu l'shul amechel b'urta, why didn't they wait to eat the carbon at night? Tumah ba'onez ba'ata. He said, maybe while they were waiting, the carbon became tummy. So the Gemara says, Bishlam rabbanan haidu dechdiv hayom. So that's why it says hayom, meaning you should have brought it today, but you could have eaten it at night. Right, because again, Einanino Palayla, according to that sheet, Teller Nechemia Maya Yom, Chovar Yom, according to Nechemia, who holds that he was distinguishing Karbanot of now and forever. What does today mean? He meant Chovar Yom. So Bishon Nechemia, Hainu Dichdiv, Hain Hayom, El Rabban and Mai Hain Hayom. According to Nechemia, it makes sense that it says Hain Hayom, meaning it's the, because it's Chovar Hayom, that's the argument. El Rabban and Mai Hain Hayom, Hachikamar Haini Krivu. What it means is my son sacrificed, right? Did they sacrifice, meaning regular kohanim, and then it would be pasul? No, Akhar Mahini Krivu, Ani Krafti, I brought it. And then Amar Mar, Hayu Lishlashtan, Lish Yisrafu, my Shlashtan. So the pasuk says, shouldn't you have burnt all three of them? What are the three? Ditanya, Vetzir Chatat, Darosh Darash Moshe, Sa'ir, Zusa'ir Nachshon, right? That was the carbon of Nachshon. Chatat, Zuchatat Shmini, that was the Chatat of the eighth day. Darosh, Seir Shorosh Chodesh. Right, that's where I was getting the idea that for Chazal, this is specifically Seir Rosh Chodesh. Yachol Shloshta Nisrafu. You might have thought all three were burnt. Time of Lomar Vinei Saraf Echad Nisraf Lo Shloshta Nisrafu. One was burnt, not three. It's singular. Darosh Darash Tedrishot Lama. Lama, Amar Lum, Ibn Machatazu, no, Nisrav of Elum, Nachot, Veinu de Ezu, right? Why were two burnt and not all three? Veinu de Ezu, Kshuomer, Votana, Tam Lachem, the Sede, Avona, Ida, when it says, that's the carbon I gave to you to atone for them, Eveomer, Zusair, Shel, Rosh Chodesh, and then the Gemara continues with the, its discussion about Aninit Balaila, Aninit Bayom, but we'll stop. We'll stop there for now, though we're going to be focusing on some of the other Agadot that are further reading the Pesukim next week. Shkoyach, guys.